This is Jerry Sorensen speaking from the University of Alaska. The next voice you hear will be President William R. Wood addressing the people of Northwestern Alaska and congratulating them on their new educational-oriented radio station, KNOM.
Congratulations to KNOM and the people of Nome, the Seward Peninsula, and the Bering Sea Islands upon the inauguration of a new education-oriented radio station. Northwestern Alaska has a notable history and a fine tradition of friendliness and hospitality seldom matched elsewhere in the world. There is in prospect an exciting future for the area based upon known resource potentials and people potential. Education and KNOM certainly will play major roles in the unfolding of that bright tomorrow. It is a privilege, upon the occasion of its beginning, for me to offer KNOM every good wish for its success.
Shall we end this nonsense, Mrs. Sterak?
Population increase. Alaska ranks second in the nation in the percentage of change in public school enrollment from 54 to 64, showing an increase of 113.6%. Alaska ranks first in the nation in the percentage of increase in the number of high school graduates from 1954, showing a phenomenal increase of 235.9%. At the same time, our state is fortunate in ranking second in the United States in the median of school years completed by persons 25 years and older. This education, coupled with the youth, the pioneering spirit, and the enthusiasm for our frontier state, indicates a brilliant future for Alaska, but only if we do not deny Alaska's youth the opportunity for an education beyond high school. Now, this is not mere conjecture. The youth who will be entering college in 1980 are here today. These are the 15% of Alaska's citizens under 5 years old, my children and many of yours. For years, administrators of public colleges and universities have warned that the college population would soon explode. Suddenly it did. In the 1964-65 school year, this nation's colleges and universities were drowned by the first wave of war babies hitting the campuses. The second wave will be bigger, and it is only the beginning of the greatest crisis ever to face higher education. Parents who think their sons and daughters can always go to a state university if turned down by schools of their first choice are in for a shock. Every year, both private and public universities are raising entrance requirements and becoming more selective. Every year, tens of thousands of qualified students are turned away. Alaska faces such a crisis, but it has the benefit of the time and the pre-planning to avert it. The Board of Regents of the University of Alaska had the foresight more than a decade ago to plan for the impending population explosion and the great need for technological education. Alaska's own enrollment crisis is now in the middle stages of development. Our high school graduates in the spring of 1964 numbered over 2,000. Alaska's high schools now have 2,600 seniors who expect to graduate this spring. Over 1,000 of these are from the Anchorage area. The Anchorage area alone, in fact, presently has a total enrollment of almost 20,000. A total enrollment of 31,000 by 1970-71, with 7,000 in grades 10 through 12, is a conservative estimate. Alaska is on the threshold of a major population growth. Anchorage, as the center of the state from the standpoint of communications, transportation, and potential industrialization, seems destined to become Alaska's metropolis. Anchorage will have a population of 225,000 or more by 1980, a conservative estimate based on an average annual increase of 5%. Through expansion of its existing Anchorage Community College, technician-level education, military on-base programs, and specialized upper division programs, the University of Alaska can meet the present and growing public educational needs, which are its responsibility. The University of Alaska's entire community college system and its main campus are tailor-made to grow with the surge of new students. Through foresight and action of Alaska's citizens, our state can avoid a crippling crisis in higher education. And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced weekly by the Office of University Relations at the University of Alaska and recorded at University Radio Station KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at college, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature story from your state university. What is a modern university? It is a community of scholars, a home for several disciplines, a center in which many kinds of professional education are gathered. It's also a center for advancing knowledge through research, a place where error is exposed by the collision of mind with mind, and knowledge with knowledge. The University of Alaska, to be sure, is all of these, but it is also different. The University of Alaska is emerging as a new kind of institution of higher learning, dedicated to filling an entire range of intellectual and cultural needs of a vast area, and to filling all of the public needs for higher education of a huge state. The university is responsible, under Alaska's constitution, for extending educational opportunities to all who qualify and are capable. It is responsible for training technicians and professional practitioners, and providing a general education beyond high school. In order to fulfill this mission under rapidly changing conditions, the university must continually reevaluate its role. Under law, it must consider the many and diverse types of higher educational needs and take appropriate action to meet them. Such action was taken more than a decade ago. The university's Board of Regents adopted the concept of expanding university activities into the areas of the state with the greatest need, while at the same time expanding the main campus at college as the state's higher educational center. From this concept has evolved the evening and correspondence programs, including military on-base classes in 6 locations. Research stations are communities throughout the state, the Cooperative Extension Service serving many remote areas, and such special programs as mining extension and fisheries extension. Augmenting this service, community colleges have been established in 6 Alaska communities to serve local community needs for lower division academic courses, occupational courses, and general adult studies, all at low cost. The Anchorage Community College, established in 1953, is the oldest and largest in the state. In its 11 years, it has enrolled more than 20,000 people. It has offered more than 100 courses each year, and in the recent fall term, enrollment was 1,543. The number of technical students almost doubled, and non-academic credit hours more than doubled since 1963, showing the great need for technical and occupational education. More and more, the Anchorage Community College is called upon to provide specialized technical vocational education designed to prepare men and women for specific jobs. 7 such courses were taught during the fall term: electronics technician, clerk steno refresher, clerk steno entry course, clerk typist entry, basic education, highway technician and draftsman, and courses in engine mechanics, auto mechanics, and welding soon will be added. The community college also offers a 2-year curriculum in office administration and in police science, and a 1-year curriculum in practical nursing. A similar program in electric data processing is planned. In the fall term, it was necessary to schedule 3 sections of freshman English. 29 other lower division academic classes attracted more students than seating space, forcing the college to turn students away. The other community colleges at Juneau Douglas, Sitka, Ketchikan, Palmer, and Kenai, and the evening course program on the main campus for the Fairbanks area follow this pattern of providing for the specific needs of their communities. These needs are served in cooperation with the local school districts. Surprising to some is the effect on the main campus of serving many higher educational needs locally throughout the state. It does not decrease the enrollment on the main campus. Rather, it increases it. Students who otherwise would not be able to attend the university obtain their first 1 or 2 years while living at home, then transfer to the main campus for upper division work. The university also serves adults who already have a bachelor's degree. It affords them the opportunity, through selected upper division courses, to obtain a master's degree in many fields without leaving their community or jobs. This is particularly true of teachers and engineers in the Anchorage area. Diversity and comprehensiveness are the key ideas in the development of public higher education in our modern world. The University of Alaska follows this concept. It has the fortunate opportunity to maintain Alaska's ranking as the state whose citizens rank 2nd in the nation in the amount of formal education. Perhaps we can become number 1. And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced weekly by the Office of University Relations at the University of Alaska and recorded with the cooperation of University Radio Station KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at college, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature story from your state university. Public colleges and universities everywhere in the United States are in serious trouble, trouble which could help bury Alaska's public higher educational system deep in problems. The cause of the trouble is simple. There are not enough college facilities for the crush of students who want to enroll. The population explosion, growing technology, new work requirements for specialized education, the need for continually updating education, all these contribute to the avalanche of students smothering the nation's universities. Tens of thousands of qualified young people are being turned away. Many cannot find another college their parents can afford. The University of Illinois last year, for instance, was forced to refuse admission to 5,000 fully qualified students for lack of space. To help solve the space and cost problem, Illinois has adopted a master plan calling for coordination and expansion and establishment of junior colleges in the state. The president, Dr. David Henry, said by locating junior colleges where students can live at home while going to school, costs are minimal for everyone. It's cheaper for the students and for the people trying to provide the education. The University of Washington is another one. It's raising admission requirements and turning away Washington State students, as well as out-of-state students. Because of a lack of space, the University of Washington canceled a reciprocal fee agreement with the University of Alaska and with other schools. President Charles Odegaard is calling for more and more junior colleges to help take up the overflow. The University of Massachusetts last fall had 12,000 applicants for the freshman class. They had room for only 2,600. The University of Michigan has strict admission requirements for Michigan citizens. For out-of-state citizens, there are only 1,000 openings for each 6,000 applicants. The University of California has a master plan for higher education, similar to Alaska's Community College and Regional Center program, which has given California a head start in coping with the problem. Still, admissions are being restricted. Out-of-state admissions are now limited to those in the top 6% of their high school graduating class. At other colleges and universities, similar restrictions, along with explosive expansion, higher tuition, longer class days, year-round operation, and other emergency measures are in force. Between 1960 and 1970, 26 million young people will enter the work world. This, according to the Manpower Report of the President, is a far greater number than the country has ever had to educate, train, and absorb into employment in any previous 10-year period. It's one thing to advocate training for 26 million young people. It's another thing to provide that training. It will require a massive effort on the part of this country's citizens. In just 15 years, more than 8,000 qualified Alaska students will be seeking admission to Alaska's higher educational system. This is a conservative estimate based on projected high school graduates and population. How many of them will be turned away? Well, Alaska is still able to meet student demand, partly because of planning, partly because so many Alaska students are still being accepted by outside colleges. How long will these parents and students be able to go south? Well, because of the student population crisis and skyrocketing costs, there is no guarantee that stateside schools will continue to accept Alaskans. Continued expansion of our state university, both on the main campus at college, in the regional-owned base programs, extension programs, and in the community colleges of the state's population centers, will afford our youth the open opportunity for after-high school education, close to home, at a cost parents can afford. These opportunities also must be accessible to all students. The Anchorage area, with a population triple that of the Fairbanks area in 1964, sent only 162 students to the University of Alaska at college, 450 miles away. Fairbanks area, near the main campus, on the other hand, sent over 600. Can we afford to expand our public higher educational system to meet these urgent demands by our youth? Can we afford not to? And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced by the Office of University Relations at the University of Alaska and recorded with the cooperation of University Radio Station, KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at college, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature story from your state university. One of the big hurdles facing parents of students approaching college age today is the skyrocketing cost of a college education. The average annual cost for one student to attend a private college in the United States is $2,400 this year. The annual average cost for one student to attend a public tax-supported college or university is $1,600. Each year, these costs are going up. Of the 280 state universities and land-grant colleges in the country, only 13 avoided raising student costs in 1964-65. One of these 13 universities to hold the line on costs is the University of Alaska. To Alaskans, total fees, room and board for an entire school year, is only $1,245. Based on the national average of $1,600, which undoubtedly will increase each year, young parents in the United States face a minimum expense of $6,400 for each of their children to acquire a four-year college education. To this must be added extra costs for clothing, books, and, of course, incidentals. For parents with three children, this is a startling $20,000 expense in their future. It's a big question. How many parents can afford this? Because of the expenses involved, it seems probable that many individual high school students will be denied the opportunity for higher education. It certainly is not the fault of the student if his parents cannot afford their schooling, and we cannot expect the federal government to finance the education of all these young men and women. For this reason, university programs of student financial aid are becoming more and more important. At the University of Alaska, this financial aid takes the form of various scholarships, grants in aid, loans, and part-time employment. During this present academic year, from last September to March 1, 415 different students at the University of Alaska received financial assistance from these sources. 245 men and 170 women students participated in financial aid, totaling $309,795. For instance, 23 students shared in Alaska Native scholarships, 40 students shared in state room scholarships, 73 students shared in scholarships resulting from a state income will to the university, 109 students qualified for special earthquake scholarships from the Ford Foundation. Other types of scholarships this year were individual scholarship donations administered by the university, Bureau of Indian Affairs grants and aid, and scholarships administered by individual donors but recorded by the university. Student loans amounted to over $67,000. Now there is a rapid increase in pressure on student assistant funds at the University of Alaska. Last spring, the scholarship committee reviewed 85 applications from graduating Alaska high school seniors and 150 applications from currently enrolled students, for a total of 235. By March 15 this year, 275 applications had been filed, a 20% increase. To qualify for a scholarship or other financial aid at the University of Alaska, a student must have good academic standing, must have financial need, and be of good character. At many scholarships, donors have added specific requirements, such as the recipient's major field of study, class standing, hometown, or some other qualification. How do students apply for scholarships? Alaska high school students who plan to attend the university apply through their high school guidance officers. Currently enrolled students apply through the Office of Student Affairs on campus. Loans are made only to currently enrolled students at the university. The applicant is interviewed, then the loan committee considers the individual applicant's situation. Few, if any, loans, however, will be available to incoming freshmen or transfer students in the coming school year because of a shortage of loan funds. It is unfortunate, said University President Dr. William R. Wood, that there are not enough scholarship and loan funds available to assist all of the qualified and deserving students. With the cost of college education rising each year, such financial aid funds are of utmost importance if many bright students are not to be denied an opportunity to learn. Scholarships of all kinds are badly needed at the university, but especially needed are those which are as unrestricted as possible in regard to specific qualifications of the students. Scholarships may be established at the University of Alaska through the Director of Student Affairs, University of Alaska, College Alaska. And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced weekly by the Office of University Relations and recorded with the cooperation of University of Alaska radio station, KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature story about your state university. One of the cultural highlights at the University of Alaska, eagerly awaited each year by faculty, students, and citizens of the community, is the annual Festival of Arts. This year's festival started on April 1 with a lecture on public reaction to pop art by Professor Helmut Van Flein, head of the university's art department. This lecture on a subject which has been met with considerable art world controversy in recent times marked the beginning of the 15-day festival. This past weekend, two world-renowned authors lectured on the festival's theme, Cultures in Conflict. Norman Mailer wrote The Naked and the Dead, considered by many critics as the best novel to come out of World War II, when he was only 25. It was published in 1948 and remained on the bestseller list for months. His other books have been Barbary Coast, The Deer Park, Advertisements for Myself, and this year a new novel, An American Dream. Ralph Ellison, a Negro author, won the National Book Award in 1953 with his novel, The Invisible Man. Ellison, a lecturer at Yale University, recently published another book titled Shadow and Act. Ellison has been publishing in many magazines since 1939. He has lectured on American Negro culture, folklore, and creative writing at a number of universities and colleges in the country, and he studied in Rome for 2 years on a fellowship from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. The primary concern in Ellison's writing has been the identity of the American Negro. Another highlight of the festival is the presentation of the play Look Homeward, Angel, based on Thomas Wolfe's famous autobiographical novel by that name. It is being performed 6 times during the 2 weeks. This famous play, which has won the Pulitzer Prize and the New York Drama Critics Award, brings to life Thomas Wolfe's own turbulent family. The play's action is confined to a few weeks in 1916, when Wolfe was 17 years old. The cast has 20 characters, and it's a fast-moving drama. Thomas Wolfe is generally recognized as one of the few authentic geniuses in American literature. He was a physical giant of a man who died tragically young at the height of his literary creative powers. He was a writer of tremendous drive and power, sometimes opinionated, but definitely never dull. The play is directed by Professor Lee Salisbury, head of the university's Department of Speech, Drama, and Radio, who is remembered by Alaskans as the director of the extraordinary production The Fantastics, and The Lady Is Not for Burning, and last year's festival play, The Caretaker. The Caretaker won almost all of the awards at the White Horse International Drama Festival last year. One of the top features of the play is its elaborate set design. The set shows the full front of the Dixieland boarding house, the scene of the entire play, and it's on a revolving stage containing 3 bedrooms. Brooks Atkinson of the New York Times said of Look Homeward, Angel, "It raises the homely affairs of an obscure middle-class family to the level of vigorous literature." In conjunction with the festival, the university will present 2 special events, the Spanish dancers Susana y Jose and a drama company called the Kaleidoscope Players. Also this week are presentations of Juan Carlo Menotti's modern operas The Medium and The Telephone. A number of exhibits will complement the various cultural events during the festival. An exhibit called The Edge of Pop Art is displayed at the University Commons through April 12. The 30 pieces include works of some of the top West Coast artists. Paul Schinkel of the University of Alaska's Department of Art is presenting a one-man art show in the Commons April 11 to 15. During the entire festival, a United Nations photo exhibit, a native art exhibit, and an ivory carving exhibit will be displayed in various university buildings. The festival theme, Cultures in Conflict, is the subject of a special panel discussion by Alaskan artist Fred Mokatants, editor of the Tundra Times' Howard Rock, dean of the university's College of Behavioral Sciences and Education, Dr. Charles Ray, Alaskan economist Dr. George Rogers, and James Bennett of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Other events are an evening of poetry, featuring poetry written by university students and faculty members, a design and creation of a teapot, lecture by University of Alaska Professor Warren Ottemiller, a special showing of the film Black Orpheus, showings of the films Matisse and Picasso, and special showings of children films. And that's the Festival of Arts. And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced by the Office of University Relations at the University of Alaska and is recorded in cooperation with University Radio Station KUAC.
Campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature story from your state university. The eyes of the world this week are on a historical event which concerns the University of Alaska. In many nations, men of adventurous spirit are watching and waiting as the final voyage of Arliss II is nearing the end. The crew of Arliss II is preparing to abandon her before she breaks into 1,000 pieces in the stormy waters of the North Atlantic Ocean. And like men who have gone down to the sea for ages, those who have sailed the Arctic Ocean on Arliss II are nostalgic at the prospects of her retirement. "We hate to see her go," said Max Brewer, director of the university-operated Arctic Research Laboratory at Barrow. Brewer has a particular fondness for this venerable chunk of freshwater ice, which has made modern scientific history. He discovered her in 1961. She was then slowly traveling in the Arctic ice pack about 130 miles north of Point Barrow. The log of her modern journeys was started when she became a floating laboratory for the ARL in May of 1961. Since then, she has continually carried passengers and crew. The letters ARLIS in the name Arliss II stand for Arctic Research Laboratory Ice Station. This strange vessel is a floating island of ice about 1.5 miles wide and 2 miles long now, with a thickness of 45 feet. When she was first boarded in 1961, though, she was about 3 miles by 4 miles and more than 70 feet thick. But over the years in the grinding ice pack, many chunks of Arliss have broken off to become miniature ice islands themselves. Her log shows that Arliss has traveled a zigzag course east across the Arctic Ocean, passing within 86 miles of the North Pole. Twice she crossed the international dateline. During this 4-year trip, she served as a roving laboratory from which scientists from several nations explored the climate, water, and ice, the sea bottom, and other features of the Arctic Ocean. In February this year, Arliss rounded the tip of Greenland and since has been on a southerly course to destruction through the Greenland Sea toward the warmer waters of the North Atlantic Ocean. She's reported this week at 72 degrees 16 minutes north and 17 degrees 33 minutes west, still in a heavy ice pack extending to within 50 miles of the Iceland coast and 100 miles south of her. Loose ice begins 150 miles south. The island is drifting at a rate of about 6 miles a day. The last air flight from Barrow to Arliss, some 2,300 miles, was on March 25 in the ARL's R-4D aircraft. That's a Navy version of the DC-3. ARL flight crews have made 40 supply trips a year, to the island since 1961. Plans for the evacuation, expected to become a reality shortly after April 15, have been carefully prepared for months. Using the R-4D on wheels or skis, depending on condition of the snow-packed airstrip, research laboratory crews will make 4 or 5 trips to the island from a U.S. naval station at Keflavik, Iceland, a round trip of about 8 hours. The R-4D will remove all instruments, people, generators, winches, and radios. 2 weasels and a large cat will be taken off with a C-130 aircraft, or perhaps by the Navy icebreaker USS Edisto. 17 temporary Type Wanigans on skids will be left to ride Arliss to the end. It is less expensive to build new ones than to remove them, said Brewer. They have been used 4 years. On board for the final voyage are 31 men, including 15 scientists, 6 Arctic Research Laboratory personnel, Navy officials, and newsmen. Brewer and University of Alaska President Dr. William R. Wood will be in Keflavik for the evacuation. How long Arliss II was floating in the Arctic ice pack before her 1961 discovery is not known. It probably never will be. Some scientists believe she is the island sighted as early as 1909 by Admiral Peary on the first sledge trip to the North Pole. Others believe that Arliss is the same island sighted and photographed by Eskimos off Point Barrow in 1931. It is entirely possible that she started her long historical voyage a century or more ago. Today, though, one thing is certain about Arliss. This floating island's strange voyage will soon be ended. And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced by the Office of University Relations at the University of Alaska and recorded with the cooperation of University Radio Station, KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature story from your state university. 9 Alaskan students are attending schools of medicine, dentistry, and veterinary medicine in other western states this year. And it isn't so expensive as it might be. They are studying under a special regional low-tuition plan sponsored by the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, commonly known as WICHE. Because of the small population of Alaska and the consequent small demand for medical studies from Alaska's high school graduates, it is not practical for the University of Alaska to offer these studies. So the University of Alaska, as a member of WICHE, cooperates with universities in Arizona, Colorado, Hawaii, Idaho, New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, Wyoming, California, Montana, Nevada, and Washington in a special regional exchange program. Taking advantage of the program, according to Dr. William R. Wood, University of Alaska president, are students from Anchorage, Fairbanks, College, Juneau, Ketchikan, and Palmer. They are, from Anchorage, Michael James, attending the University of Washington Medical School,
and William Day, attending the University of Oregon Dental School. Lawrence Winter of college is at the Colorado State University Veterinary School. Gene Ruggles is at Stanford University Medical School, and Lawrence Coons and Rosemary Sundborg, both at the University of Washington Medical School, all are from Fairbanks. Attending the University of Washington Dental School is Alan Gray of Juneau and Philip Tucker of Ketchikan. From Palmer is Klaus Jade, attending the University of Oregon Medical School. Five of these students, Winter, Mrs. Ruggles, Coons, Tucker, and Jade, did undergraduate work at the University of Alaska. Here's how the program works. Under the exchange program, schools of medicine, dentistry, dental hygiene, and veterinary medicine in the West Coast area contract through WICHE to admit qualified students from states which have no professional schools in these fields. As a sending state, Alaska certifies that the student is an eligible resident. When he is accepted by a state university, the student pays the regular tuition charged by the school to residents of its own state. A private institution gives him a substantial reduction in tuition. Alaska then pays the school a fee which helps reimburse it for educating the student. This year, over 500 young people are studying their professions as WICHE exchange students. This involves a transfer of more than $800,000 among the states. The program benefits the students, the states, and the schools, according to Dr. Wood. The students pay only the in-state tuition. The states without professional schools are able to provide professional training for future physicians, dentists, dental hygienists, and veterinarians. The schools gain by receiving direct payments, which help cover the actual cost of educating a student. Each institution participating in the regional student plan decides which of its curriculums it wants to designate as regional programs. It then admits to these programs as many qualified students as it can accommodate. Some of the regional programs begin at the freshman level, with students entering directly from high school. Other programs begin at the sophomore, junior, senior, or graduate level. Students entering at advanced levels will normally take their preparatory work at institutions in their home states, then transfer when they reach the level at which the program becomes regional. As a member of the WICHE Regional Program, the University of Alaska offers special studies in Arctic wildlife management and Eskimo language and culture. The Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, which administers the exchange program, is a public agency supported by the 13 Western states. Its primary responsibility is to help the states improve their higher education programs through regional cooperation. Dr. Wood is a member of WICHE's executive committee. Alaska's other two WICHE commissioners are John S. Helenthal and Mrs. John R. Roderick, both of Anchorage. And that's it for this week. This Is Your University is produced each week by the Office of University Relations at the University of Alaska and is recorded with the cooperation of University Radio Station KUAC.